Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast. Stories for entrepreneurs and artists who share their stories as we discuss everything storytelling. If, like me, you run an artistic business or any business, storytelling is something that we do all the time. So the better stories you tell, the more fulfilled you'll be in business and in life. I'm Gemma Rosenthal of Creative Hearts, and this is my co-host,
Chris Sissons, and my business is Market Together. And on today's show, we're going to explore the use of storytelling in copywriting and the power of storytelling in languages other than English. Now then, each month we invite a guest who uses stories in their business, charity, or simply because they thrive on a story, on stories, to discuss the power of stories.
This time, we are delighted to introduce our guest, Mac Malenga. Mac is a copywriter who specializes in writing copy and creating messaging for coaches, experts, and businesses. He believes that showing your personality and your thoughts are key components in attracting the clients that you want. Welcome, Mac.
Hello, happy to be here. Thank you.
How are you today?
I'm marvellous, and it's a pleasure to be welcomed onto the Find, Tell, Share podcast.
Yes.
I'm remembering it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're here, and I feel like this has been a long time coming because we've known each other for quite a while. Me, you and Chris were part of Connection Cafe. A while ago, which is a group that used to meet up, and yeah, I've been following your social media and seeing your growth as a copywriter for quite a while, so it's great to finally have you on the podcast.
It's an absolute pleasure.
So if you could tell us a little bit about what drew you to copywriting, what was the moment when you went, I know, I'm going to make magic words and create my business in copywriting? Was there a moment, or did it slowly, gradually come to that conclusion?
Okay, so we can either go with the public relations version that I tell everybody who's in business, and you know, or we can go with the real version. Which one do you want?
Always the real.
Okay. So the real version was, I had had a number of jobs from working in PR to finance to charity to even packing poppadoms in a factory over a summer, hot, and I'd never eat a poppadom from a factory ever again. But, you know, the common thread I loved is that I would always meet people and I would always hear about stories, which is why it's nice to be on here and, you know, listen to your podcast and things like that. And I always used to write and think about personas and things like that. And I didn't realize that you could get paid for writing until somebody asked me to do a few blogs for them, a few web pages, and the rest is history, as they say. So, by accident.
Oh, okay. So it was literally someone asked you because of your skills, yeah, and then you realised, oh, I can get paid for this.
Yeah.
That's really good. It's sort of what Chris talks about, real work, when there's something that you naturally do really, really well, and you just got asked to do it. I don't know how did you start doing storytelling, Chris? Do you have a similar sort of thing, as in helping people with their stories, any relation to what Mac just said?
Yeah, well, a few people had said I was a good storyteller over the years, and I did a course with the Public Speaking Academy in Sheffield a few years ago. There were four of us doing the course, and the course tutor, and I said that I was thinking I might take my business in the direction of storytelling, and they all fell about laughing. And I haven't looked back since. I had to prove them wrong. Because there's no money in storytelling. Except that there's no money without it either.
Oh, yes.
There might not be any money anyway, but that's another story altogether.
but you decided to do it.
But so you mentioned... I was going to say, you mentioned Mike's body of work, real work, and I just thought it would be interesting to ask you, Mike, you're a copywriter, but is there anything that you're writing which you feel is sort of building towards something, your body of work, or is it all little magazine articles and things like that? Or, you know, have you got a magnum opus inside of you?
Well, you know, how do I answer this question? Every day that I get to do a little bit of writing for somebody, or, you know, I get to, you know, express how they're visioned and their dream for helping other people, I feel like I'm part of something. So I don't know yet, but, you know, time will tell.
Definitely. I was going to ask you, because you've come along to a few of my Find Your Voice sessions, mm-hmm. and recently I've seen you've been doing reels. So you started. So just tell us a little bit about that journey of finding your voice and expressing yourself a bit more in your business and through social media.
Okay. So it's funny that doing video is something I don't normally do, because I grew up with a speech impediment. So when I was young, I used to have speech therapy, which, now I think about it, was actually quite a godsend, because instead of just speech therapy, I probably had some, you know, elocution lessons and learned how to pronounce things properly and learned how to speak from the right place, instead of speaking from, hi, how are you? Yes. And that's how I would speak. I'd be like, and I couldn't pronounce fish for some reason. It would be like pish and all other things I couldn't pronounce. So I used to have speech therapy. So I've worked with a few coaches. I've been to your sessions about finding your voice and things like that. And my coach, he was like saying, I was working with a recent coach and he was saying, Mac, why don't you do reels? And I was like, oh, because I don't have any time. Then he said, no, why don't you do reels? And then I was like thinking, actually, what is the reason I don't do reels? And it's quite vulnerable to have your natural voice in a video, because everyone can look at the intonation, how you speak, your body language. Whereas if I'm in my comfortable element of writing in a persona, because we all write in personas when we're writing social media posts, everyone said it's the real thing, but I think we all have a business persona that we, this is my business head and a commercial head, and this is the message I'm trying to deliver. When you speak to other people, you're connecting at a more human level. So that the journey of starting to do real, and it does connect with people, because people feel like they can get to know you and they don't have to read so much. So that was the journey, and it's still going on.
Yeah, so it's about connection, which comes back to obviously how we met each other through Connection Cafe, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So tell us your story. We're ready to listen and excited to hear what story you've brought today.
Okay. So a few years ago, I did something that I'm not proud of, and I paid the consequences for it. And I've discussed this with a lot of other people, and they've said, oh, yeah, I've done the same and I wasn't proud of it either. I cheated on my barber. I know. I know. It doesn't seem like a big thing, So I remember going to the barber shop, and going to the barber shop in the black community, the barber'd like the like an OG life coach, an original life coach. He knows how to talk to you, and he knows transformation. He does transformation, makes you go from feeling a 2 out of 10 to feeling out of this world. So I was waiting for my monthly fade, and the queue was so long, it was going to take like 4 or 5 hours. And I was like thinking, I cannot be waiting in line. So I was on London Road and went down the road to another barber shop that wasn't full. Schoolboy error there. Absolutely schoolboy error going to a barber shop that wasn't full. It was nice and clean, no one in there. As soon as I got into the chair and I felt the cold clippers, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be bad. This is really going to be bad. You know when somebody knows how to do hair, because it's nice and smooth, it's like a ballet dance. But this guy, his hand was shaking, it was moving around my head. And I was like thinking, it can't be that bad. It can't be that bad. And then he got out the scissors and started hacking at my afro hair. And I was like, why is he using the scissors? And then as the haircut was going on, I was like thinking, how am I going to rectify this mistake? How am I going to rectify this mistake? Because I was in contact. I was having a haircut because I had like a job interview in the next 2 days or something. And I thought, I better get a haircut like 2 days out so that it doesn't look like I've put too much effort in. Because I don't want to look like I've put too much effort in for the job interview. I want to look like I'm cool. I'm calm. I'm relaxed. This is how I normally come with great hair and stuff like that, and it would have grown out a little bit. And he kept chopping and chopping and chopping, and then finally it got to the end, and I was like, oh my gosh, what the heck had he done? Like, half of it was uneven. I walked out of, and then he said, It's £8. It was cheaper than the other barber, but I'd have paid double, absolutely double, not to have it. Not for him not to touch my hair. I'd have paid double or even triple. And then I'd like walking out of the barber shop into my car so that no one would see me. No one I knew would see me. And then I said, I've got to go to Meadow Hall to go and get a hat. Because a hat's going to solve a bad haircut, isn't it? A hat will solve a bad haircut. And then I went into Meadow Hall looking for a baseball cap. I never wear a baseball cap, but this time I was thoroughly, thoroughly hacked off. Using the pun, hacked off. But this time I was really annoyed. I was looking for hats. None of them actually quite fitted with the look I was going for. And then I was like, I can't wear a hat. I'll just have to go back to the barber's. So I went back to my original barber's, and he looked at me like going, what the, has somebody done? I was about to go, well, I must have done it myself. I was like, I gave him this look of, you know where I've been. I know where I've been. Just anything would be better than this. And he rectified it, thankfully. And when I went out, I was like feeling $1 million again. I was like, thank God. Never, ever will I cheat on my barber again.
Thank you, Mac. You know, it's funny because I've heard that story as a written story. How did it feel to speak it out loud? Is this the first time you've spoken it out loud? Is it normally written when you tell the stories? How was it for you?
I think, you know, the speaking it out loud, I had to relive the experience as I'm doing it. So it becomes a lot richer and I get back into the mood and I'm trying to transport somebody into that, into how I was feeling at the time. And my body changes as well as I'm telling it. So it goes like almost you're transported back to the position that you were in before. So
I just remember as well, there's a little bit more on the written version, which you relate it back to business. And why is it so important that we should trust the person that is doing our hair, or in maybe coaching it will be, or you know, somebody that you're buying something from, a customer perspective, that you need to trust the person, and then from a client perspective, you know what I mean?
Okay, so from a client perspective, when you go to somebody regularly, they know everything about you. They've almost downloaded every part of you. So if it's a hairdresser, they know what stuff you like, what stuff you don't like. They also have this declarative knowledge bank in the back of their head, so that they could say, "Oh, same again," and they know exactly how you want the blade on your head and how you want it cut and things like that. As a coach, I think when it comes to coaching, in you know how somebody wants to be greeted, how to make them feel comfortable, what make them feel at home, and what make them, because it's quite a vulnerable experience, a one-to-one process. So fit is so integral.
Yes. And as a business owner, how can we use our stories, or this is a question probably for both of you as well, to make sure that a person knows that we're the right fit for them and that we're going to give them a good haircut in the sense of the metaphor?
Testimonials, making sure that people, they see people like them who have been through the process before, and those people talk in their own language, how they felt before, how they felt afterwards, what the process like, so that a person actually feels like they're getting helped now, they're going through the process now while they're being helped. I think when you see somebody who's like you, you go, okay, I trust that their judgment, it's not a risk, because everything's a risk.
It's just made me think as well about the fact that my latest music video has me getting a haircut. And I got mine done at Haggler's Corner, has a place called Gypsy Rose Hair. So we filmed it there, and my hairdresser is Lolita, and I knew, because I trusted her, because she'd done my hair before, so I trusted her so much that I knew she'd be able to cut while I was being filmed. So if the video is done, we'll put that in the show notes as well for illusions. And I don't know if we can, Chris, but also if we can put the song at the end of the podcast as well, that'd be good.
In terms of marketing, I think the really important thing to understand is that you are communicating something of yourself to enable your prospect to make a decision. And if the decision is, don't want to go anywhere near him or her, that's fine. That's not a problem. You've achieved what you've tried to do, because they're looking for something and they've eliminated you from the list of possibilities, and that helps them. And it's the same with barbers. So I'm just fascinated to hear that for Mac, the regular barber is so important. I do have a regular barber. My view is you only find your regular barber by cheating on your regular barber. For me, I'm sticking with the regular barber that I have because I can book it online. I need to get. I know that if I get there, even a few minutes early, she'll see me straight away. In 10 minutes later, out. That's it for another 2 or 3 months. That's always been my view of barbers. It's something you've got to do occasionally, because otherwise your hat doesn't fit. But beyond that, one of those distractions. And we always have a good chat while I'm there. I was using her over the lockdown, and so we had a lot of conversations about the implications and wearing masks and hygiene and the impacts of that on her business. So all of that's been very interesting. But she hasn't said so much, but I think she sort of hinted that I could go a bit more frequently and it would feel a lot better. But there you go. But we're all looking for something different, whatever it is that we're buying. And that's the key to marketing.
So just to add one more thing as well is that my hairdressers, they specialise in curly hair. And something that you mentioned on your recent post was be specific when you're marketing. So the fact that they specifically market to curly hair worked in my favor because actually it's like, well, I have curly hair. I need, a hairdresser that specializes in curly hair because that makes a lot of sense when they say that. So could you say a little bit more about like, being specific, how important is it to be specific?
Okay, so the problem is everyone, because I don't know whether it's our childhood or something like that, but we want to please everybody. We're programmed to please everybody, and when you do that, you don't please anybody. You don't even please yourself because you're trying to cater for too many people. Whereas if you are very specific and you say, this is for curly hair, this is for Afro hair, this is for European hair, even if somebody said, I can't go to that place, at least they've made a decision. The worst thing you can do is make customers indecisive, as Chris said, and go, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure. The best thing is to make people go, yes, no, I can trust that person because they know what they're going to do. And they know what they're going to do with my hair. They know what they're going to do with my coaching service. Let's say if they coach just women, then I wouldn't be their target audience, and that's fine. Another thing, if a restaurant catered for people who they say, we don't want vegans, and I'm vegan, and that's fine too. That's completely fine, I think. But when you're not specific, it's actually quite exhausting for you as a business owner because you're trying to do marketing to everybody. And I've tried that avenue to try and cater to everybody, and it doesn't work because everyone's like, what do you do again? What do you do? So, yeah.
And I think it's also important to remember that it's not, niching isn't necessarily just about what you offer or who you offer it to. Mm. That's one thing. Obviously, the more specific you are and the clearer you are, that's great. Mm. But there are other ways of niching as well. For example, some life coaches only work with women or only work with men, or rather turn it around. They state that as a preference. Mm. So if somebody who doesn't meet the preference approaches them, they can make a referral or they can make an exception, and that's up to them. And then another way, and this is where the stories are particularly powerful, is your worldview, the sort of person that you are, and you will attract some people who are attracted to you, other things being equal. So, for example, a barber might have voted leave in the Brexit referendum might then, because they go on and on about it, attract customers who also voted leave in the referendum. And if the word gets round that that's the leave barber and the remain barbers down the road, that's fine. You know, you've got two thriving barber shops.
So the next part of the podcast, we're going to talk about how language changes a story or affects a story. So I've been actually learning very, very beginner level Spanish with Victoria, who is my Spanish teacher. And she does Spanish lessons in Sheffield, if anyone is interested in going along to Spanish class. And I know that also Mac is also a Spanish learner as well. So the reason why I say this is not so that I can show you my very limited Spanish at this point. Hopefully I will be able to speak it soon or as I'm learning. But the reason is it got me thinking, you know, because she does sometimes tell stories in class and she'll act it out with her body as well. So if she's saying, for example, a dog, which is perro, she will go, woof, woof, you know, and do the sounds. And, you know, we then can understand what dog means because she's doing the sound and the movement as well. And I know that there's a lot of element of body language, sounds that we can all relate to. No matter what language we are, it doesn't matter what the you know, the language is, we can all relate to these different sounds and movements as well. And I know Chris has a little story about that as well. So Chris, do you want to share?
Yeah, well, my story is about language as well. And you need to go back in time to the summer of 1996. And it was the first day, the opening ceremony for Methodist Conference. And so all these very important Methodists from all over the country were together in a great hall in Blackpool. And as part of the opening ceremony, they traditionally are welcomed to the city where the conference is going to be. And they'd engage the mayor of Blackpool to do that. But on the very day, at very short notice, the mayor fell ill. And so a councillor had to step in. And the councillor obviously hadn't got a clue what to say to all these very grim-faced Methodists. Methodists are not renowned for their sense of humour, I should say. And they were there for a week of contemplating the finer points of model trusts and rewriting standing orders for the church as a whole. So the councillors thought, what can I do? Oh, I know. I shall tell them the ballad of Albert and the Lion, which is a sort of national anthem for Blackpool. You may know it. It begins, there's a little seaside town called Blackpool that's noted for fresh air and fun. And Mr. and Mrs. Ramsbottom went there with young Albert, their son. The whole thing will be on a link in the show notes. So he started reciting this. And as he progressed through the ballad, all these Methodists were roaring with laughter. Yeah, they were laughing, and I was there, and I was one of them. They were laughing like they'd never laughed before. And he was obviously beginning to think, maybe I should have a job as a raconteur. I'm obviously brilliant at this. And towards the end, just two or three verses to go, he turned to his left, which was where I was sitting, so I could see his face. And at that point, he saw the reason why everyone was laughing. And the look on his face of sheer disbelief was, well, is inexpressible. So what? So you're wondering, what was it that he could see? He could see the reason why everyone was laughing, and the reason was the signer. And normally, the signer is someone who you might watch out of a bit of intrigue, but in the end, you don't really see them unless you need their services. But this signer had clearly performed Albert and the Lion many times before, and he looked like older listeners might remember Arthur Mullard, but a big, stocky nightclub bouncer type, flat hat, belt and braces. He was an absolute picture. It was hilarious. And the whole conference was roaring with laughter at this amazing performance. And the counsellor was basically providing subtitles for the signer. The reason I tell this story is because I think it illustrates how we can appreciate a story in a language that we don't know. So most of us don't know sign language. Oh, we might know a little tiny bit, but mostly we've no idea what the gestures mean. But one of the great powers of sign language is that you can include obviously facial expressions are important even in everyday sign language, but you can also include mime and acting and so on, and you can enhance, just as we might enhance in a spoken story by using our voice in different ways, but you can use the body in all sorts of ways. When you saw him, what he did with the stick with the horse's head handle, you could see that stick and where it went and the consequences thereof.
Thank you, Chris. Mac, what's your... Well, first of all, did you have anything that come up during that story? I've heard it one time before, not actually fully, because Chris just told me a bit of the idea. But what was coming up for you during that story? And then also, do you have any thoughts on language and storytelling? And do you have anything to share about your journey with that as well?
So, yes, storytelling and language. I lived in China and had to learn how to speak Mandarin through several intensive classes. I ended up being okay, but not the best. But I realized that telling a story in a different language required you to be really direct and to the point and not fluffing around. But then you use your body, your language, the way you move to try and connect with somebody. And yeah, everyone starts laughing because you probably pronounced words incorrectly. And yeah, it is funny. But what did I, sign language? When I do see people, signing and things like that, it's interesting to see that some of the signs we won't understand, but some are universal. We use them as well. So to finish off a sentence or to make a point, body language will go forward if we want to look interested, we'll lean back if we want to look less interested.
Another example of how we encounter other languages is opera. And when I was young and became interested in opera, a very sad child I was, you read the synopsis and then hope that you could follow what was going on the stage. I mean, these days you've got, what do they call it, where the titles are above the proscenium arch, or you've got subtitles if you're watching it on a video. But the language of music and the language and of other languages. So, for example, if we take the words "I love you," which is quite a common sentence in opera, it sounds quite different in the different languages. So you've got "I love you" in English, "Je t'aime" in French, and I can't remember what it is in Italian. Russian, it sounds like you're dropping a pile of bricks in front of somebody. But the language itself shapes those words and how they sound. But then, of course, the composer can add their music to that as well. So although Russian sounds like quite a sort of heavy language, the music can lift it. And so we get that. And Gemma, just to reflect back to you, because you keep asking us awkward questions about language, but you're a songwriter. So you can take words and make them fly or make them fall to the ground and squeak, whatever.
Well, something I've been realising that as I'm learning Spanish, I have all these songs that have Spanish words in, you know, English songs, but they may reference ones that I've known for ages, like a Spice Girls song that I just suddenly realised has Hasta Mañana in it. And I was like, I can't remember the exact phrase, but it's something like "Until Tomorrow" or something like that. Do you know, Mac? It doesn't matter if you don't. But and then the other one was like "Te Amo," which is by Rihanna, and she says, "I think it means I love you." So it's interesting how these songs just there's even Spanish songs like "Gasolina" is in Spanish, and we hear all these songs, "Despacito," which now I know means slowly, and it's like you don't actually understand them until you start to study a language, and then suddenly the songs have meaning. But it's not that they didn't have meaning before, it's just they didn't have that specific meaning. I don't know if this happens to you, Mac, when you learn languages and then suddenly you recognize songs that you've heard for a long time but didn't
when
know
I'm when I'm out meant. In a club or in like Spain, I'm like, I recognize all the words. I'm like, I know what that song means now. It's not a romantic as I thought it was. it's not as innocent as I thought it was. And
yeah. It's like you've just been opened Pandora's box into another world.
It's really interesting to study another language because you're like getting into somebody else's world and other culture, and it starts infiltrating some of your English sentences, especially if you're conversing in Spanish and in English to somebody. And some words, I've got a friend, some words she'll say to me in Spanish, then some words, the sentence will be in English, but some words will be in Spanish, especially swear words done better in Spanish.
Yeah. I did accidentally, I had a real embarrassing moment the other day with some swear words in Spanish, but I'm not going to tell that story on the podcast. But so coming back to your business, Mac, we mentioned a bit earlier was specific customers. So who specifically do you like to work with, and what's your ideal client, I suppose. The people I really enjoy working with.
Expert in their field and people who are passionate about what they do. They live, they breathe, and you can see it on their faces because it oozes from them. They can't do anything else apart from that. They can do something else, but their life wouldn't be as full if they didn't do what they're doing. Those are the kind of client I like to work with because they get you in. They see you as an expert, for one, but they also teach you a few things. And, you know, when you work with a client, it's a cross-educational pathway in that you learn from them, they learn from you, and suddenly you've picked up lots of stuff. I've worked with a coach and he'd taught me some stuff I never knew before that now I'm just like, wow, I never knew that sitting in silence could be like powerful. I always thought you had to fill up the space, but no, you don't. Listening is so important. So, yes, those are the clients I like to work with, people who listen and people who are just ooze passion in their field. And you know it from the first moment you meet them.
Yes.
So,
and how can those
if you want to just find me
find
for
you?
Just business,
where can they find
me? Find me on LinkedIn at Mac Malenga. You won't find anyone else, I'll check. Mac Malenga. If you want to find me for business on Instagram, I've got a business page, which is Magic Mac Media, at Magic Mac Media. If you want to check what kind of a guy you're going to work with, if he's the right kind of guy for you, if he says anything controversial, it's a public profile, so you can stalk it and I won't mind. You can even look at the stories and I won't mind. The Real Magic Mac.
Amazing. Thank you so much. And did you mention, do you have a website?
I do. It's called magicmacmedia.co.uk.
Fantastic. And Chris, who do you like to work with? And then share your links as well, or anything that you've got coming up. I know we always have the links in the show notes, so anything that we don't mention, it'll all be there anyway to contact any of us.
Well, I work with business people who have stories to tell, and my aim is not to write the stories for them. I'm not a copywriter, but to really help people with their storytelling so they can take any incident in their life, for example, a visit to the barbers, and turn it into a story. And I've learned a great deal simply from listening to people's stories. I've done over 85 telling stories, making business meetings now. And the aim of that is actually, first of all, to provide a few business people with an opportunity to work on someone else's story, because I think that's a really good way of learning about storytelling. But the person who tells the story also takes away a colossal amount, because they don't just hear from me, they hear from a few other people as well. And so they get a breadth of feedback on their story. And it's really exciting. You never know what people are going to come up with. So if you would like to have a go at telling a story or hearing and working on someone else's story, contact me through all the various ways that you can, and we'll take it forward from there.
Yep, and you can find me at creativehearts.coach and at Gemma Rosenthal. And if you want to watch my music video, Illusions, we're going to play the track in a minute as well. It'll all be in the show notes. And yeah, you can also have coaching sessions with me. I do creative coaching, finding your voice. So do you wish you had more confidence in your speaking, in your singing or writing? And it's not just about having more confidence in performing, which I can obviously help you with in terms of performance, but also about finding that inner voice, your intuition, your guidance. Where, how do you want to share your voice? Who do you want to share it with? These are all things I do in one-on-one coaching sessions with me, and also workshops. So you can check them out. Links will be below. And also make sure to listen to all the previous podcasts as well. Take a look at the episodes, see which ones take your fancy. We've had artists, entrepreneurs. There's so much wealth of experience and storytelling within these episodes. I really recommend checking out some of the other episodes. And thank you so much for listening. And we'll see you next time.
Okay. Goodbye.
Thank you, Mac.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Wish we could see us, wish we knew.